Good afternoon, dear ladies and gentlemen, followers of Dearborn Blog. Today is April 26, 2020, Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 2:03 p.m. And this is your host, Wissam Sharafuddin. Welcome to another episode of We Are In This Together. We Are In This Together is a non-scripted, live, non-profit broadcast by Dearborn Blog to have conversations that become oral history records of our lives during the COVID-19 pandemic, also known as the coronavirus pandemic. These are personal stories of our lives during these unprecedented social isolation measures, especially in a globalized world. In our studio today, we have Talal Matar. Talal is a graduate of philosophy from Carleton University, Canada, researcher and translator residing today in Kuwait. During the day, working with the Kuwait Ministry of Electricity and Water, apart from the day job, working on translating modern topics and philosophy to be more accessible to Arabic speakers. Also, he's a founding member of the Vision Book Club, which aims to bring awareness to philosophical topics that are foundational to critical thinking in our modern day society. أخ طلال أهلا وسهلا بك.
أهلا وسهلا سيد. Thank you سيد.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
I have known you for probably two decades.
Oh yeah, yeah, long time.
Although we never had the opportunity really to meet face to face.
Inshallah one day.
Inshallah. I've been a big fan of your posting. You're, to tell you the truth, you're one of my favorite social media friends.
It's a great honor to Sayed. Thank you.
I enjoy following you, the depth of your postings. It's always beautiful what you share, really. Not usually what you see on social media. And I really enjoy it. If more of people do what you do on social media, it becomes such an enriching facet.
Thank you, Sayed. That's a great honor to know that. On social media, I'm actually trying to be myself, you know, just posting what I read, what I'm interested in, and trying, you know, to not put everything, but put something that's useful. That's something I find useful, and hopefully somebody else finds also useful.
Great. So, how are you doing?
Surviving.
I know it is. What time is it right now? Is it 10 p.m. in Kuwait?
It's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Yeah.
You had your iftar already?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Iftar and hani and Ramadan Kareem, by the way.
Ramadan Kareem to you. Thank you.
So, Talal, we've talked about, you know, I've introduced the audience to you briefly on the biography. Tell us more about yourself and your life today in Kuwait.
In Kuwait, life in Kuwait. You know, one time I had this conversation with a friend of mine here in Kuwait, because I spent a long time of my life in Canada. So I lived in Canada, and now I'm living in Kuwait. It's like two lives, you know. It's not like one life. It's like two lives. The life in Canada is it's easier. You can be what you want to be, you know. Not exactly, but to a certain degree. But in Kuwait, it's kind of harder. It's kind of you are pushed to be something. Sometimes maybe something you don't like or you don't want. So it's harder to be yourself here in Kuwait. It's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of, I don't know, maybe it's the culture. There's lots of mental games with people. It's never direct approach of anything, not in work, not in anything else. It's always mental games. You have to play these mental games to get what you want or to get anything, right? So I've been, but it's been going good here in Kuwait. I've been here for a while now, and it's coping with it, you know, getting used to it.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I've had, you know, I know you through our common friend Mishal.
Oh, yeah.
And Mishal told me when he, it's similar perspective as you've said, when you live for a very long time in Canada, especially in Canada, very liberal, you know, free society, even more laid back than the US. The US is a kind of a little bit tense and militant. But and then, you know, going back to the Middle East, especially to Kuwait, they always reflect that, that they find it difficult to, you know, like switch their brain to start dealing with a different type of culture and a different type of way of thinking, I guess.
Exactly. That's what I was getting at. It's you know, in Canada, it's laid back. Like, if you want something, you just go direct. You want to buy something, you want to, you know, you go to the ministry, you have some paperwork to do with the government or anything. You just go in and it's easy. The steps are right there. Everything is right there. And nobody is, you know, having, I don't know, play mind games or, you know, mental games with you. But here, the culture is very different. And you have to adapt to it, you know, in order to, you know, get your things moving and to be able, you know, to cope with it and get your things done, right? It's a lot of mental games. You have to cope and you have to know these tricks and ways. And it's not a bad thing, though. It's not, like I'm saying it, it's hard, but it's not a, like a completely bad thing, or it's like, oh, wow, worse, you can't live in here. No, no, it's to a certain degree, it's tiring sometimes. That's all, you know, the negative side of it. But it's pretty good. I mean, people here in Kuwait are usually, you know, nice people, kind people.
That's great. I know that you, as a philosopher, really, a person who studied philosophy and continues to study philosophy, I have a lot of topics that I'd like to discuss with you in philosophy, but probably will host you in different programs for that. Today, it's going to be light. We're going to be talking really about your personal experience during the COVID-19. So we're trying to, every time, every episode, to try to bring someone from a different part of the world to it's an opportunity for me to connect with my friends abroad and also share that connection with the world, really, and create an audio record, create a record, a media record of our experience in amidst the pandemic, because we don't know what the future is exactly yet. During this very special times that we haven't experienced on Earth since the Spanish flu pandemic in 1918, it has changed our lives drastically, and it has united us in a way or another. So tell us about how did this affect your life? What is the situation in Kuwait today as far as coronavirus, and how did it affect your personal life?
You know, it's in Kuwait, with the Kuwaiti culture, and not just the Kuwaiti culture, but the Arabic culture as well. It's hard. It's hard not to be able to go out to meet people, especially here right now in Ramadan, to get the family together in the iftar time, breaking of the fast. It's taking its toll on people psychologically, mentally, physically. The time, like now in Kuwait, you're allowed to go outside from 8 o'clock till 4 o'clock, 8 in the morning till 4 afternoon. After that, you're not allowed to go out. You have to stay home. If you want to go to certain places, like, let's say, a supermarket or a hospital, you have to apply. The hospitals, if it's an emergency, you just go in, right? But other than that, you just have to apply online. The government made an online website that you book an appointment in order to go to the supermarket or to go anywhere else after the after 4 o'clock. So it's been like this for almost a month right now, or a month and a half. Actually, 2 months right now. So it's kind of hard. It's taken its toll on people. For me personally, I've been going to work in the morning. So that's not much changed for me, except that after I come back from work, I have to stay home, can't go outside. Used to going outside, meeting people, you know, going to different places, especially in Kuwait, where we have these Diwaniya, you know. So it's yeah, we miss them here too. So it's really hard, you know, to just cope with staying at home.
So at your work, why did you have to still go to work? Is that
because we work in the Ministry of Electricity and Water, right? So we have to still provide water and electricity to the people. Mm-hmm. There is a lot, actually, of work we have to do in the ministry. We work in the power stations, power plants. So there is a lot of requirements for us to be there for work.
And do you experience social isolation within work? Did they like separate between people?
Yeah. We take our precautions, right? We wear our mask, we wear our gloves, and we have these sanitizers everywhere, just in case. It's sometimes tough, you know. It's because we have to make all these decisions, all changes. We had all these agreements for contracts and all these maintenance for power plants and all that. We have to change them. You know, try to find a work around it.
Amazing. Just for the record, so Kuwait, as of April 26, 2020, you have 3,075 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and a total of 20 deaths. Yeah. We are in Michigan. Today in Michigan, let me give you an updated number. This is just for the record. We are at a cumulative, where is it? I'll take me a second to pull it out. But anyway, so do you feel that Kuwait has done good? And I mean, given the numbers, it seems it has done good really in controlling the pandemic.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I like the way the government have taken the issue seriously from the beginning, and they've been dealing with it accordingly. Yes, it's hard with the you know, stay at home thing, but overall, they've done really a good job. They've tried to control it. I mean, most of the cases they are under quarantine, so it's really good. It's a great job they're doing here right now.
Great. So internationally, we are at 2.92 million cases. We have 829,000 cases recovered, and we are at 204,000 deaths. In the United States, we are at 976,000 cases, 109,000 recovered, and we are at 55,000 deaths. And in Michigan, specifically where I live, we are at 37,000 cases, and the number of deaths are 3,274. That's given a population of about 10 million in Michigan. What's the population in Kuwait today?
It's with everybody in Kuwait, Kuwaitis and non-Kuwaitis, it's almost 3 million.
3 million. Okay, yeah. So it's kind of relevant. No, actually, it's a lot less. So Kuwait is doing a lot better than America, relatively speaking.
If you look at the system,
I think, you know, this has uncovered a lot of issues in America, right? The health system that we have, etc. Like, we have an issue here in Detroit, for example, due to the you know, there's a lot of reasons, and a lot of research is yet to be done, but some say that it is due to the issues that were prior to the pandemic. So there were health issues, and there was lack of healthcare before even the pandemic started. Anyway, I'm happy that you're safe, you and your family. Alhamdulillah.
You're safe, Sayyid.
Thank you.
Hopefully, you stay safe, you and your family and loved ones. Huh?
So this has been how long you've been in quarantine now? This has been
since the 12th of March. So
it's almost now 6 weeks.
We're going to the second month right now. Yeah,
6 weeks. Me too, I think, similarly. I think a little, maybe a week after you. how is it now? Like, you know, what were your feelings when this started? And did your feelings change now, or you still have the same feelings about it?
Well, to be honest, at the beginning, it's just, you know, I didn't think it's what it's this serious. You know, I didn't take it seriously enough, you know, but as things starting to unfold, and then I realized, no, this is something dangerous. You know, I don't want, you know, like you hear all this talk, you get all these rumors, all these people talking different things about COVID-19. So you don't get a clear picture, right? So I was, you know, relaxed a little bit, but then it hit me. It's, no, there are people dying in big numbers, and it's not a good thing. Maybe, you know, like I was at the beginning saying, okay, I'm young, it doesn't affect young people that much. But then you realize it's not just about you. You're going to go back home and there's these kids and there's these old people. It's not just about you. So after a while, yes, I changed. My views changed about the whole thing. I started taking it seriously. Whenever I go out, I have my gloves with me. I have my sanitizer with me, my mask. I don't want to take any risk here, right? So it's not worth it to take any risk with such a...
Have restaurants shut down in Kuwait? Malls? Shopping malls?
The malls, yeah. The shopping malls, yes. Everything is shut down. Restaurants are open. Not all the restaurants, some of them. For delivery, usually you can't go in and sit and eat. You just either buy it and go home, or you order it to come for you at home before 4 o'clock, right? Other shops are closed, not just you know, shopping malls. Any other stores are also shut down. Supermarkets are open until like 3 o'clock, and then they close and open again in the quarantine period for appointments. So it's pretty much a serious thing going on.
Now, with the price of oil and the coronavirus pandemic, are you feeling an effect on the economy of Kuwait?
To a certain degree, not that much right now, but if this stays longer, yes, everybody's gonna feel it. Right now, it's I think it's under control. The effects are not appearing as much. You can't see them as much. But if this stays for longer, yes, we're going to see a lot of effects of that. Hopefully, it doesn't stay that long.
Are your kids studying at home?
The good thing is, yes, my son, who's the only one in school, right? I was teaching him before this whole thing happened. So he was at home, like I was teaching him at home.
Homeschooling?
Yes, homeschooling. So when this thing happened, it didn't change much for me, because I already had my things for him, right?
Oh, great.
So not much change here.
Yeah. Does he study English and Arabic?
Yes, because he was in Canada, right? So his English, he's teaching him also on the Canadian curriculum. But I'm also adding the Arabic and Islamic topics to it.
Yeah.
So teaching him Arabic language, but still not that successful. English is easier to speak for him.
This is the pandemic of Arabic language too. You know, we have to talk about it a different time. So your friends, Kuwait is a very social place, you know. People gather in Diwaniyat. For our audience that don't know what's that, is basically like salons where people gather. People have open salons for guests to come, and people just frequent different salons where discussions are made, music is played, food is served, and that's almost a nightly habit. Where people congregate together. Also, mosques are available in every corner, so people pray in mosques all the time. And during the month of Ramadan, this is a month of family gatherings.
Yeah.
So, you know, like America is individualism. There's a lot of isolation. People are used to You know, exactly. We are bald eagles, right? We we soar alone in the skies. We're cowboys. True. But I don't want to stereotype. But what's the situation now? How are people suffering? Are some people like just getting sick of Corona and just going out, or what?
Well, if you go out, you know, you get punished. Like, there's a punishment for it. You're breaking the law here. But yeah, people are getting like tired from this because they want these gatherings. Like, this is their life, right? This is their habit, you know, to go to this salon or to that salon or diwaniya, to discuss, to play, to see friends, to see family members. You know how it is, like in Kuwait, right? The families are bigger. And you got friends and everybody. So this is the hardest part, is where you can't see anybody. You have to stay home. Even in the morning, people try to avoid these gatherings, but it's hard. Some people are like, you're still doing it in the morning, right? When they're allowed to go out. But it's hard. It's hard for the people to cope with this thing because the culture here is very social. It's all about getting together and doing things together. You know, there's this, like, no matter how much I emphasize it, it's you have to live here to see it, to feel it. You know, the individualism of Canada or USA, you can't see it here in Kuwait. Like, Kuwait is the total opposite. Everybody, like, even for lunchtime, right? It's hard to eat lunch by yourself. You have to eat it with somebody. If you're at work or you're at home, you have to eat it with somebody. It's always like this, right? So this is what the hardest thing, you know.
Now, people like you who have a, you know, habit of reading and studying, you know, you find more time to do that. But people who don't, how are people spending their time other than TV and...
Netflix, Netflix, and some games. You know, we have these traditional games we call. I don't know if it's called the same thing in English. It's Kerem. It's an Indian game, really, but it's very popular here in Kuwait. People are playing this. People are playing, you know, cards.
What is Kerem?
I'm gonna have to send you a picture of it, right?
Hopefully, they play it at home.
Yes. It's basically a board, a wooden board. It's like billiard, but we play it with the hand. Fingers,
yeah.
Right?
I remember it, yeah.
And it's
some powder.
Exactly, that's the one. There you go, you know it. Usually this is it, and TV, especially right now with Ramadan, it's TV.
And how about you personally? How have you been spending your extra time?
I'm also watching some TV shows. Not much movies, but yeah, TV shows. I've been getting into some of them that I really like.
Let's get to that then. What is the last film that you saw, Talal? And what film do you recommend for our audience?
Last film I saw, the last one I saw was Mission Impossible. I think it's the sixth part. Yes, I watched it. Me and my son. So we wanted to be. He wanted to watch a movie, so we watched it together. Mm-hmm. What film do I recommend? Interstellar. If you haven't seen it yet. I would recommend that. So it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm. What did you like about it?
The artistry, the philosophy behind it, the conflict, the way Nolan shows the conflict between science and emotions, between especially love, is something interesting to look into. It's very beautiful the way he shows love and how it drives us, motivates us. And how the conflict with science is not really a real conflict. It's just an illusion, really, not really a real conflict there.
Mm-hmm. How about books? Let's talk about books. I know this is one of your favorite, Talal. What's some of the books that you are reading right now? And you see, this is the purpose of this, is that people are read different things, they're interested in different things. So, and our social media these days, it's a bubble, right?
Exactly.
The algorithms written for your Google search and for Facebook and social media basically shows you what you are interested in, shows you what you already like. It doesn't expose you to something that you don't really are usually exposed to. So this is an opportunity to expose people to things they're not exposed to. So I know that you have a different list of books that you read.
My reading habit sometimes is, I have books for night reading, like stories, little novels. These are just for night, before I sleep, I read these sometimes in Arabic, sometimes in English, depending on the mood. But the things that I really like to read and search into is, they're not depending on the mood. I have to sit down and read for these books. I was reading one of the books for one of the Sufi sheikh. It's an Arabic book. It's called Ayun al-Haqa'iq. Mm-hmm. You know how the Sufis have these moments of kashf, we call it, or unveiling, or witnessing, like shuhud. He's writing down his... these moments of these unveiling, these moments of where he sees or witnesses these
visions,
exactly. It's very deep. It's very interesting. I've posted some of it on Instagram stories, like what he said, some of it, but the rest I didn't post. It's a small book, not that big, but it's
what
really
year, what year profound. Was it?
Oh, it's the author is let me see here to make sure. He was at the time of I'm thinking in Mamluks, so they're not writing the dates here, but I'm thinking he's in the time of the Mamluks, or maybe before that a little bit. The Mamluks is the time of the Mamluks. The Mamluks is a period of rulers that ruled Egypt after the Fatimid period.
Yeah, I'd say between 12th and 13th century.
Around that, yeah.
What book do you recommend, Palan?
And I'm also reading another book. This one is in English. I would recommend this one if you're interested in art and philosophy and maybe a little bit of spirituality, like especially Islamic spirituality. It's called Beauty and Islam by Valerie Gonzalez. If you want to show you a picture of it right here.
Sure.
It's
interesting.
Yes, it's very beautiful. Written beautifully, and it's deep. It's not there's a lot of philosophy behind it. Like the author is well into the philosophy, like Western philosophy and Eastern philosophy, like Islamic philosophy, which makes the book very valuable and very interesting. And it's easy to read. It's not that hard.
Why did you pick that book?
The Beauty and Islam?
Yes.
I knew my first time where I got into this book was we were having a discussion, me and my friends, and we a couple of my friends who were calligraphers, like Islamic calligraphers, Arabic letters calligraphers. So we were discussing, and it's like a small book club, right? Well, that's not a book club, right? So everybody was presenting something about beauty, art, and Islam. So I got into this book right now, and they presented a section about it, about Sayyidina Sulaiman, and how beauty is in every part of Islamic religion. It's not just, it's like something on the side, and whenever you have time, you look into it. No, it's you have to do things in a beauty, in a beautiful manner. I've been, especially with this verse, I've been contemplating for a while. The verse says, "Man aslama wajhahu lillah wa huwa muhsinun." وأحسن أو وهو محسن أو أحسن عملا. There is always this word محسن أحسن, which is really have vast meaning. It's not just about doing something correctly, it's also about doing it beautifully. محسن من إحسان أو حسنة أو حسين, which is always refers to beauty and greatness or exquisiteness. So it's beautiful the way it relates to the religion and spirituality. Yeah,
we haven't thought of the word Hasan from a beauty perspective. We always thought we always translate it as good, like amal Hasan. We say good deed, but in actuality, in Arabic, Hasan means beautiful.
Exactly.
So it's beautiful deed.
Yeah, we say hasna about a beautiful lady. Yeah, we say hasna, right? So it's related to beauty. So when we say a muhsin, muhsinun, man aslama wajhahu, he's given his soul, his self to God, and did these good deeds, not just good deeds, but also beautiful. In a beautiful manners and presented it in a beautiful way, so it's good motivation to do things beautifully, not just
that's a big statement for artists, right?
Exactly.
We're talking about the aesthetics of presentation. That's an artist field, and that is a very beautiful artistic interpretation of these verses.
Oh yeah, and in this book you find a lot of similar stuff like that. It's an amazing book.
I included the link on Amazon for the book. It's kind of expensive, $43 used, so it's out of print, and it's now sold used for $43. Available new for $137. So
wow, didn't know that.
So this is for people. Yeah, I like it. I like it when books are expensive. It's like telling people, you know what? Yeah, you know, it's too expensive for you to read. People like take it for granted, right?
Exactly.
I don't want to read. I don't feel like reading. You know what? You can't afford reading anymore. How about that?
It's not a hobby. You're supposed to read, right?
I mean, if they know the value of reading, they would allocate a budget for it. The power enhancement and progress of life that can be gotten from book.
Absolutely.
It's kind of if you look at the habits of successful people, reading is all over it.
True.
Yeah. Bill Clinton, Obama used to read one book a day. Bill Gates is a big reader. Steve Jobs, all these people there.
Personally, it's one of the things that expanded my knowledge and made me. Like I can say, a better person, you know, made me see things differently, see things hopefully correctly, in the right way. I always tell my friends who are not motivated for reading that it's reading is like opening a window into other people's souls and minds, right? So when you hold somebody's book, like you say, you hold Plato's book. You're going into Plato's soul and mind, right? You're going into a discussion with him. You're not just reading these words like this. No, he's interacting with you. So it's imagine that, talking to all these people. You know, it's something amazing. Mm-hmm. It's intellectually satisfying.
My cousin left a message that his name is their names are all with Hassan in it. You're all beautiful, guys. I love you. Ghadir, Mohsen also indicates an active attempt to beautify your character and improve yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talal, what's a show that you recommend or you've watched lately?
One of the shows I would really recommend, even though the third part right now is a little bit disappointing for me, but overall this is one of the best shows. It's Westworld. Mm-hmm. Westworld right now is I find it the artistry, the philosophy in it about free will, about what is it to be human, the most fascinating and interesting to look. The way they show it is very beautiful.
Westworld.
Yes, Westworld.
What was it? Is it on Netflix?
No, I don't think it's on Netflix. I think it's HBO, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, I see it. All right, Westworld.
It's Nolan brother, the other Nolan. It's a very interesting show. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's a show that it's trying to grasp what is it to be a human, right? It's always this is like you know what human is, right? We know what humanity is or what the human is, but it's so elusive when we like we know it at the same time we don't know it. It's so elusive when you come to, you know, define it, put it into words. It's just elusive. You can't catch it, but at the same time, you know what it is. It's very exquisite. The show and the way they try to show that it's very beautiful.
Awesome. I left a link also for our audience in the comments.
Excellent.
So, is that what you recommend too, Talal? Do you recommend this show?
Oh yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there is another Asian show. Korean show I would recommend. Also, it's called Kingdom.
I've heard that before. You're the second guest who recommends this show.
It's a nice show. Not the same level as Westworld, but it's nice.
I think your taste is like mine, so I'm appreciative of these recommendations.
You haven't seen Westworld yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, shit. The second part is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, amazing. I've struggled finding shows that I really like. I just finished Orthodox, which is only 4 episodes. That was very good. It was recommended by another guest on this program too.
It's about a
Hasidic Jew who runs away from Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York, where they're highly concentrated. I like it. I belong to an organization called Muslimish that have people with a lot of similar experiences, so I kind of related to it. Talal, music. Do you have any recommendations in music? What new music you have discovered? Or
I'm not sure my taste in music is still liking Said Wissam, though. We have in Kuwait here what we call Adani. No, not Khaldun Mullah, but close to. it's similar to. I mean, this is the music I like. We call it Adani, especially the really slow kind. They call it Adani. It's where it's because I like the sound of oud and violin or qanun and nai. So these things I like. So usually I listen to this kind of music. You have this old Kuwaiti singers like Hamed Sinan or Fawaz Marzouk. I don't know if you're gonna like these or not.
Give me something specific. We'll listen to it for a minute.
Sure. If you go to YouTube and search for Fawaz Marzouk, this is an old poem by Antara. He's gonna sing it. It's called Muhafhafatun.
Allah.
You find it?
Yeah.
They put it on Kuwait TV, so it's really good.
Yalla.
Yep. You can skip a little bit until the beginning. I don't know how long is it. Yeah, that's the one.
ما في موال أول شيء؟
لا لا, it's just a little قانون. If you can skip it to the beginning, it's. Yeah, right there. That's good. Thank you. what we call Adani. So it's Adani, but it's for Adani.
This is my favorite music, by the way.
Really?
Hey.
I'm glad you like it.
Maybe and because a lot of my childhood memories in Emirat. Awesome. Thanks, Talal.
You're welcome. Appreciate so you get this. I prefer to listen to the proper Arabic language, like Arabic al-Fusha in the songs. Usually, that's it. This is it about music.
Yeah, I love it. I love it when Arabic poems are recited in a Sha'bi song, in a popular traditional styles of either Kuwait or Yemen or Adani style. I enjoy it the most because you're getting the beauty of the Arabic poetry with the nice rhythms of Arabia.
Exactly. You have this culture in there, you know, it's not lost yet.
There are questions from the audience, from our participants, previous participants, that we're going to start asking you right now. This question is from Kathy Brown from Argentine. What do you think the ideal outcome of this pandemic at a personal level and at a collective level?
That's a hard question. The ideal outcome of this pandemic, a personal level? You know, sometimes life takes you, you kind of lose your, not lose, but, you know, like move away a little bit from yourself or the most valuable things. Like you move away from introspection because of all the work and all the going out, the socialing. So it kind of become away from yourself. But personal level, this is a good opportunity to come back for me and introspect and get closer to myself again. With this time, I mean, you're already socially away from people, right? So this is for me what I'm actually trying, you know, to getting back into myself and realizing myself, knowing myself better. So this is at the personal level. At the collective level, I'm hoping people realize that it's the people that matter. It's not the materials. It's not what we buy. It's not the stuff that we usually seek that are superficial, really. It's not the material world that it's more important. It's humans. It's our emotions. It's our health. This is the most important. Hopefully, collectively, this is the message that we can, maybe people can understand.
Awesome. Question from Ali Sharafuddin. What are some of the things you are accomplishing staying at home during the pandemic? And some say that this will become a question in interviews in the future, in job interviews. our generation.
You know, before the COVID-19 came, most I was, you know, a little bit, you know, with work and my friends and all this kind of, I was away from my family a little bit. So it's a good time to come back and spend time with them. So this is something to accomplish, you know, to get these connections stronger, get them in there. And besides finishing book story, that's, I'm actually getting into a new, let's say, hobby, collecting gemstones. So it's yeah, that's hopefully it's a phase and goes. It comes and goes very fast.
You know, every time I buy a ring with a special gemstone, I eventually lose it. Oh. So I decided not to wear any.
Minimalism. I mean, you should hang them like a necklace.
Let's worry about.
Oh no.
Question from comedian and politician and activist Amr Zahar. What food reminds you of your childhood?
My childhood. That's it. Ice cream.
What kind?
There's this, we call it Lulu. So it's a chocolate. When you finish it, when you finish the ice cream, there is another chocolate. Like it's two layers.
Oh, wow.
So it's, if you like chocolate, then this is it. When we were kids.
You know what? I remember that. It's vanilla, and then there's chocolate inside of it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the one.
See? It's been a while.
It's childhood.
Yeah, I've always ate it just to get to the chocolate. Although it's cheaper just to buy the chocolate. I guess the journey is pleasurable.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Adnan Jaber asks, how are we going to remind ourselves about the lessons we learned during this pandemic? It's a complicated psychological question from a psychiatrist. So
it is. To remind ourselves about the lessons we learned. You see, I just mentioned before this question, maybe about how we get, you know, to realize what's more important for us and what's really valuable, when and how, even though scientifically humans are advancing and superior and they're in control of this planet, yet something so small as this virus, right, almost stops the whole world. Almost stops everything and changes the whole life. Right now, we are just talking about what we will do or how we will remind ourselves when this is done. But we're not sure this is going to be done. We're just hoping to be done. Like, we're getting all these, you know, talk that it's just going to pass by, right? But are we sure it's going to be passed? Like, are we sure this is not going to be the normal now? It's the way humans, you know, take themselves. You know, they're always, yeah. There's this always what I call the Nergisia self, the self that is like self-centered. You know, like we're conceited. We always see things from our perspective, and that we are in control. But really, we're not really in control, right? Something so small changes everything for us. Changes the whole thing. How are we going to remind ourselves when time comes that we have to choose between that people we value, people we appreciate, and other material things? This is where we, you know, try to remind ourselves that no, we choose the people, not the materials.
You know, there was recent news about a city in Japan that reopened after, you know, the coronavirus has completely subdued, right? And it resurfaced again stronger than the first wave. So they're taking this as a case study to consider reopening, that it's not going to be as simple as that. This, you know, makes us really unaware really of the end of this, and vaccines,
exactly, uncertain.
The path to vaccine will take a while, and with the current storm of conspiracy theory and distrust, so a lot of people are going to resist vaccination, unfortunately, you know.
Exactly.
For me, I trust the World Health Organization. I trust the CDC, the, you know, the control of disease. Center for Disease Control. I trust FDA, the Federal Drug and Food Administration. I trust them because these governmental organizations in a free democratic society like ours here in America are basically many, you know, a reflection of our society. So if you trust people around you, in general, you know, you trust people in the schools, you trust people in the restaurants, you trust when you go eat a sandwich from a restaurant, you don't have conspiracy theory against who's preparing the sandwich for you, you know. You trust them in general that they're going to keep. And the same thing in these organizations, these doctors, these professionals, these are people like you. They're brothers and sisters and wives and husbands and sons. And, you know, why is it all of a sudden that we don't trust this organization or that organization? Or I'm glad people trust the Department of Electricity and Water, right?
True. I mean, sometimes you have to trust such organizations. Otherwise, you're kind of living, let's say, a contradicting life, because you're living and you want this democratic and this system and this society, but at the same time, you're not trusting its own, organizations. So sometimes you have to trust it. For a system to work, you have to trust these organizations and different. But you also have to be cautious, right? You know, like not take everything naively, right? So it's give and take, right? I don't know about the vaccines, though. Hopefully we find a medicine, anybody, really. I just want medicine for this thing.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter who it is.
There is the treatment and then there is the vaccine. The treatment is after the fact that you get the virus. The vaccine prevents you from getting it. So,
We're getting vaccines for flu, right? But we're still getting the flu.
The flu, it covers, because of the continuous development of it, it covers a large number of strains. And it doesn't cover some newer strains, you know. So.
True.
But definitely, I mean, now it has been a while that people have been using the flu vaccine, and it has been proven to work fine. And, you know, it's very highly recommended by doctors and the FDA and, you know, American Medical Association, etc. You know, to the extent that not taking the flu is now, you know, frowned upon, really, in the medical community. But people still have their distrust, you know. So not only that we have to get, you know, find the science to cure it, now we have to also make people trust the science.
Trust, you know, that's the science.
Another obstacle. Hadil Diba, a musician and an activist from New York, asks, what is the last epiphany or aha moment that you had?
Oh, that's a tough question. I honestly don't know. While collecting these gemstones now, right? Buying these gemstones and looking at these auctions for the gemstones, I got this aha moment. Oh, what about if I buy some and then try to sell them in a different place, right? And gain some money. That's probably that's the last.
this is a cha-ching moment.
Exactly.
Hanan Yahya asks, what are you developing? How are you developing yourself and healing yourself?
Oh, this is something I'm trying to find. How to heal yourself. How to heal myself is, I don't know yet, but I'm trying to. This is what I mean when going back to myself, introspection, looking at myself, my action, my thoughts, my motivations, what makes me move in certain directions, and what makes me do certain things is how I really find, you know, like looking especially at my thoughts, or what we say khawatir, what first comes and last comes. So when I look into these, I try to find exactly what motivates me, what moves me, and if it's something good or something bad, I try to clear it. This is my own way of looking at myself, but I don't know if it's gonna be working for everybody or not. Takes a lot of time from me, a lot of mental work. Actually, it's tough. But this is usually this is something I've developed through my life between me and myself. Usually.
Thank you, Talal. Final question by Hadi Shatila, graphic designer and artist from Beirut. What is the worst thing COVID-19 pandemic made you discover about yourself?
Worst thing?
Sometimes it reveals our good qualities. It might also reveal some bad qualities. I know it's personal, but that's Hadi's question.
it's okay. I always thought of myself as this patient, Halim, right? But I find myself now always angry. I'm not patient. I'm getting angry faster. Like, this is not me. I'm not usually like that. But this is actually what I've discovered. I don't know if it's because of maybe the stress has taken its toll. I find myself not a patient person, like what I thought about myself. Mm. So this is, I would say, the worst thing.
Yeah, well, 6 weeks in isolation can have a toll on a person, you know. So all of us are not our normal selves after 6 weeks of isolation. They say even animals, if you have pets in the house, they're starting to act differently because they're not used to seeing you this much.
Exactly.
So, thank you. So at the end, Akhtalal, we'd like you to ask a question and answer it, and we'll add it to our list of questions.
Yeah, I would reverse this question. What's the worst thing? I would say, what is the best thing you discovered about yourself? You know, when in this time, we usually always, you know, people have say, we don't have time. I mean, right now, like, time is just... all we have, we have nothing. We're not busy anymore. So what is the best thing you discovered about yourselves in this period?
Mm-hmm. And what's your answer to that, Talal?
Best thing is I love my family, the people close to me. I think it... should spend more time at home than in Duane yet, right? probably that's it.
What's a quality in yourself that you've discovered as a good quality during this?
A good quality? Humility? I would say humility. Being humble, that's one. I think that's the most right now I can see.
Thank you, Talal. And being humbled, you won't be able to talk more about it. So with that we have came to the end of the program. Akhtalal, it was a pleasure seeing you and talking to you, really. And it took this pandemic for us to video chat finally, but we hope to stay connected afterwards. Is there any final thoughts or words?
Thank you for this opportunity, Sayed, and hopefully stay safe, you and your family and loved ones. Hopefully we'll see each other on chat about different topics, inshallah, in the future.
I feel like visiting the Gulf area, Kuwait, or Oman. So hopefully after this...
you should, inshallah. We'll, but make it in the winter, so you know, in the summer, it's not recommended. Everybody runs away in the summer, yeah.
Yeah, so the winter in Kuwait is like the summer in the U.S., so that's what
exactly, yeah. Means, yeah. Yeah, it will be a lot nicer.
Yeah, and by the way, I tried to get you a surprise in this show, which having Mishal with us. But he has a recording, so he couldn't make
it. That would have been beautiful.
He delivers his salam.
Salam. Tell him. Sorry, say salam.
All right. Stay safe, you and your family. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you,
dear listeners and followers. Thank you for watching this. It's going to be, again, as usual, podcasted into Dearborn Blog podcast, both on iTunes and on Stitcher for Android users. And it will be also, the video will be posted on dearbornblog.com. Thank you and stay tuned for next episodes. Thank you, Talal, again, and have a great night, and happy Ramadan, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you.